Revenue Committee.
I think we're going to start this afternoon with an overview of the lottery. Brenda, are you heading our overview, or do you, Mr. Yates is? Great.
Do we get a choice?
No.
Mr. Yates, thank you very much.
Legislative Revenue Office.
What's that? Are we going to do this?
Yes.
Try to go through a few areas involving the lottery. The first one is terminology. There are some terms that are peculiar to the lottery, and sometimes not, or the definition of those terms, not the words necessarily, are peculiar to the lottery, and you need to understand some of the terms when you talk about ways in which revenues are distributed. Then I've got a couple of slides dealing with the history of the lottery. We've just traced roughly how it's changed since its beginning, and talk about the net proceeds, which is essentially what's available to the state and to for distribution to other programs, both from the traditional and also from video lottery. Sometimes, again, the distinction there is a little bit unclear to some people. Traditional games in general are games where there's a draw of some sort, and the individual is one of many players who is subject to the determination of a winner from that group. So some of the traditional games actually appear on a screen, and you might think of them as video games, such as Keno. But they're traditional lottery games because there is a draw, and the winner is, you know, one of many possible winners. With the video as it is now, video poker, essentially it's one man against the machine. And so that's basically why it's different. The other difference is that, major difference is that traditional games are available to anyone 18 years of age and older. Video games are generally in, well, they have to be in licensed taverns, taverns licensed by, or areas licensed by OLCC. And they're available, therefore, only to persons age 21 and older. And then talk a little bit about the transfers. The difference between net proceeds and transfers is essentially one quarter lag between when the lottery gets the money and when it's able to pay it out. And then look at some of the issues that are involved that may come before you this session. Terminology, the first revenues that come into the lottery basically are either game revenues or other revenues. Game revenues come from the sale of tickets in the traditional games, and from the video lottery, it's either money that's put into the machine or games that are won. So games that are won essentially constitute revenue. I guess games that are lost constitute revenue, too.
That's been my experience.
Other revenues then arise from interest and also from unclaimed prizes. Prizes are the amount that's paid to the participants of the game as a result of choosing the right selection or whatever. And then net receipts, the first term that's important, is simply game revenue less prizes. And the reason this is important is that the distribution back to the counties is based on this county number, net receipts. The next item involved is expenses. You have game expenses, which can be related back to the individual games in the traditional area, and then general operating expenses of the a lottery, which are not game specific. And then whether it's an expense or not, you have a difference between net receipts and the gross receipts, which we'll have next, or net proceeds, which involves movements into and out of contingency reserves. So basically net proceeds, and this is the basis of the distribution into the Education Stabilization Fund, the Parks and Recreation, and those two distributions primarily. The basis of that is the net proceeds, which is net receipts less expense. Lottery history. The lottery was initiated by initiative petition in 1984, involved only the traditional games, and the proceeds were dedicated to economic development as defined and determined by the legislature, what economic development constitutes. In 1989, there was legislative action to create the Sports Action Lottery, a separate lottery program, the proceeds of which go to higher education for scholarships. And the 1989 legislature also actually authorized video lottery, but that was suspended by the governor at that time. So the legislature came back in 1991 and did fully implement video lottery, and at that time prohibited all private lottery games, which were called the gray games at that time. This legislation also dedicated 2.5% of video net receipts to the counties. So the distribution here is on net receipts, which is before expense, but it's also just video lottery. It's not traditional lottery that goes back to the counties. In 1995, the legislature referred Measure 21 to the voters, and that was passed, and it added financing public education as an allowable use of lottery revenues. It gave lottery bonds first claim on lottery revenues, and it dedicated 15% of net proceeds to, at that time, the Education Endowment Fund, which has since been changed to the Education Stabilization Fund. Continuing the history then, in 1999, there was legislative action which dedicated not less than 1% of video net proceeds to problem gambling. And the last change then is the referral in the third special session during the last year, during 2002. And that converts, as I said, the Education Endowment Fund to the Education Stabilization Fund. And conditionally increase the lottery dedication from 15 to 18%. So if the general fund balance in the prior year is less than 5%, if the account balance in the stabilization fund is less than 5% of the general fund in the prior biennium, then 18% of lottery net proceeds goes into the education stabilization fund. Once it crosses that 5% threshold, nothing more goes into it. And the rate drops down to 15%, and that money goes into the school capital matching subaccount. Now, should the balance be drawn back below 5%, then again the lottery money would go into the stabilization account to maintain it at 5%. this legislation also allows the legislature, with 3/5 vote of both houses, and under certain economic conditions or with the declaration of emergency by the governor, to appropriate the principal out of that fund. Looking at the most recent year, 2001-2002, net receipts, now remember that's revenue, game revenue, less prizes, from the traditional lottery is $113.2 million. And that goes into the these are the various games, and the reason I show net receipts here rather than net proceeds is that once you move past net receipts, the expenses cannot all be allocated back to the specific games, and so I can't divide that up. So looking at net receipts, we have the instant games, which are the most important source of revenue in the traditional lottery. This is not a game, but it's a lot of different games. Lottery is continually introducing new games. And if we later get to talking about advertising, this is one of the areas where they are involved in advertising. That is, when a new game comes out, they want to make sure that people are aware of it and what the advantages or disadvantages of that game might be. The second largest contributor is Keno. Then you have the two big drawing games, the multi-state lottery and also Megabucks. Contributing, and then Sports Action, which goes, as I said, back to higher education, about 3% of the total.
Do you know what the dollar figure on that is on that?
About $34 million.
good quick math.
Be about $4 million. 3% of 113.
Like 3.4.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
This says 01-02 net receipts, so this is for every 2 years.
1 year.
Well, that's okay.
Fiscal year.
It's a fiscal year.
Oh, the fiscal year.
July 1 of 2001 to June 30th of 2000.
Gotcha, but it's annual income.
Yes.
Annual receipts, okay.
The other includes just two smaller games, which are Break Open and Pick Four. And I've told, since I did this slide, that Daily Four has been renamed as Win for Life. But those are basically the traditional games and their relative importance. If you look at all of these games then lumped together, so you have total game revenue from the traditional games, you can see how it's divided. Essentially, the top of these bars is the total, which is the sum of the net revenue, which is available and distributed or transferred out, the prizes, which are paid back, and lottery's expense. So you can sort of see over time how this has grown. It's been fairly stable of recent years. Prize percentage grew during this period, and one might argue that contributed to the growth in the traditional games. Higher payback for those playing would encourage play. And as you can see, the amount of money that's generated here, around $55 million, fairly constant. It's money that's available for transfer to the economic development account. Just looking at percentages to try and see how this has grown, again, you can sort of get a picture for how expenses have varied over the time. Now, the lottery, the Constitution requires that the total expense be not more than 16% of game revenue. And once you move into 93 or 94 when the video began, then it becomes a 16% of the total activity, both through the traditional and lottery. But you can see in the earlier period, they were of course, this is a startup when they borrowed money from the general fund in general, but they're running very close to the 16% in terms of expense. And you're running around 20, in the last few years, a little bit less, but around 20, a little over 20% of the play essentially resulting in usable revenue to the state. Shifting to video lottery revenue, again, you see it beginning in 91 and basically growing fairly rapidly there in the early years. You can see, again, the importance of prizes in the video lottery, and this is primarily because of the way they count dollars. Prizes are not only what you take from the bartender when you cash in your tab, your ticket that you get out of the machine, but it's also all games you won. So that's the total prizes. And so prizes are very large in the lottery method of accounting. And expenses are very small. And while it doesn't look significant at the green at the bottom here, it does tend to be a substantial amount of money. Again, if you look proportionately, you see that prizes dominate. That expense has continually fallen, essentially, for the video lottery. And I'm not sure what we understand from this graph, but I put it on there anyway.
I've thought that on many of the graphs. I just don't say that.
Most of them dealing with excise taxes, if you notice. I didn't have that problem with the income and property taxes. But
if you look at the total lottery, you see that beginning in 1991, when the video lottery entered, that it dominates the picture. And so basically what you see is that the traditional games are fairly small relative to the total package. And you do see significant growth in the lottery revenues, in the video revenues, which you did not see in the traditional games. If you remember, with the traditional games, the revenues were fairly flat in the last few years. But you do see reasonable growth here in the video games. Looking at transfers then and where they go, what I've got here in terms of choices, let's start from the left, is the balance, which is the green at the bottom, and that's what's essentially available for legislative appropriation. The black is the dedication to pay debt service on lottery bonds, and then transfers into, over time, it's either the Education Endowment Fund or the Education Stabilization Fund, Parks and Recreation, the counties, and then other. Other would include the sports action as well as gambling addiction. They're small, and I just lumped them together because they wouldn't show up anyway. So what you find in the beginning is basically all of the money raised by the lottery was available to the legislature for appropriation. Then in 95, you see these two little bits at the top, or 91, 93. Those are the beginning of the distribution back to counties for economic development and also the sports lottery. As you move forward, then you see rapid growth in the lottery and also the use of the lottery for the West Side Light Rail and the dedication, therefore, of some of the lottery revenues to debt service on that, on those bonds issued. And this continues sort of to just grow over time with substantially more revenue being available to the legislature. Then beginning in the 97-99 biennium, you see a fairly significant reduction in the amount available to the legislature, and that's because the Education Endowment Fund picked up 15%. And then as you move into the 99-01, you get a further hit for the Parks and Recreation. You also, during this period, see a growing use of lottery bonding and, therefore, a growing lottery debt service. The big jump here is primarily lotteries coming forth and in the last session and during the special sessions with $20 million, essentially, which they transferred out of reserves that they had, contingency reserves, and became available for distribution. So that's why the big growth in the lottery shows up there. Again, only a minor growth, mild growth, I guess you'd say, in the amount of money actually available to the legislature because of a large growth in bonding and in debt service. And then looking forward, these are projected numbers for 03-05 biennium, not actual numbers. Again, you're going to experience a significant reduction because, in this case, a very large growth in the dedication for debt service.
That's cool.
So looking at the total lottery for, again, the current biennium, you've got $680.3 million distributed. 13% of that was for debt service. 15% went into the Education Stabilization Fund, 15% into Parks and Natural Resources, 3% back to the counties. The rest was available to the legislature for appropriation. Most of that, 42% of the total, essentially, went into the state school fund. The balance, the 12% here, primarily dedicated to economic development programs. Issues I want to look at is the question of whether the lottery, or what would happen should the lottery decide to take up line games or allow line games on the machines they have. Second issue is whether that payout percentage, we looked a little bit about how that changed over time, and primarily just look at it. The question, of course, is it too high? Is lottery managing that properly in terms of trying to maximize whatever goal the legislature wants, whether it's the amount of money that the revenue generate, the lottery generates, or whether it's trying not to encourage people to play, whatever the goal is. The question is whether.
Does the commission set that payout percentage, or?
I think probably they have as much control over it as anyone. To a certain extent, it may be involved in what games you actually play and put on the machines. Mm-hmm. That maybe that can be addressed by someone who knows more. retailer compensation is the other issue. Lottery expense, again, there are at least some measures that may come before the legislature, trying to give the legislature more authority in controlling lottery expenses. And the other question that's come up in the past is whether the lottery should again be prevented from advertising. So I try to look at each one of these issues. Some of them I can, you know, maybe give you some insight on, and just don't have too much to say. Looking at lottery line games, the lottery did make an estimate which was presented to the legislature essentially in January 2002. That should they initiate line games, they could raise $80 million for the 2003-05 biennium. So that, I think, is still money that's available to us. Talking with the lottery, they basically have about 6,500 machines out there which have the chips installed and which are capable of initializing line games on those machines. And it would take them about a month to essentially activate those chips on all 6,500 machines. Mm. So as we move through this process, as long as we take some action, you know, by April or something like that, which gets them out there, I think that money is still available.
What would be the 0103? Paul and I talked about this a little yesterday. What would be the 0103, just because we're obviously struggling to close the 0103 gap here, if we did it in a month, say we decided this week that, yes, we're going to go forward, we did it, the month went by, do you know roughly what that might be able to give us for before July or maybe September?
Well, I think that you do. Did you want to answer that?
No, go ahead.
There are some administrative processes that you have to go through. You can't just say, bang, today we're going to send people out to the field to start activating these chips. Because the decision needs to be made by the Lottery Commission.
Okay. The legislature does not?
No.
Oh?
You've got to convene that commission and go through the process of their making a decision to do it. And I don't know what the administrative lag is there in that process. But once that is done, then people, I think, could go out in the field almost immediately.
Just looking at your numbers, Dick, that would be about starting up would be around $3 million a month, $2.5 million a month.
Yeah. Yeah. So 80 divided by 24. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Video prize percent, this is what it's looked like over the period of time. In 91, 92, it started out at a little over, almost 89%, a little over 88%, fairly constant for a period, and then it did increase during this period when we saw, again, a substantial increase in the gaming activity. Again, if there's an implication to that, it is that people responded to the increased likelihood of winning by playing more. And we see now that we're getting close to 94% in terms of the, so you got a 94, for every dollar you put in, you know, the expected return on that is 94 cents.
Mr. Chair, and if it weren't for my playing it, it would probably be even higher. I'm a 4%er.
How do you analyze the question whether this is too high or too low? I don't know. So what I wanted to do is say, well, what we would hope is that as these percentages change, that at least the net revenue remains positive or continues to grow, assuming that's the objective that you want. If your objective would be to reduce the overall lottery, to get people not to gamble, then you want to reduce the prize percent. But assuming you want to increase the money that's being earned by the lottery, then you would want to increase the prize percent so long as that net continues to increase after you've paid the prizes. So I tried to look at that. The dark blue line is the growth in gross revenues from year to year, and the light blue is the growth in net revenues from year to year. So you did see a little bit of a decline in this first period in the prize percent. As a result, actually net revenues grew more rapidly than gross revenues. Then you saw very little change in the next year, significant growth in both. And then as the percentage begins to come up, you see continued growth in play, and you still see positive net growth what's left over after prizes are paid. And that's occurred throughout this period. So I think it's, if there's a conclusion to be made, it's that they've done a pretty good job of selecting the prize percent, which is going to maximize the amount of revenue generated by the lottery. Not good data to come to that conclusion, but at least it doesn't point the other way. The next question is video compensation rates, and what the actual rates are now is a schedule. For the first 200,000 of annual net receipts, so that's sales less prizes. So annual net receipts up to 200,000, the retailer gets to keep 35% of that. The next 200,000, they get to keep 30%. The next 200,000, they get to keep 25%. And then 20% over everything over 600,000. And if you average what's going on there over all lottery retailers, the average is about 32%.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
How does this compare with other states?
I'm sorry, I have no idea.
Okay, that's fine.
Does anyone know that answer? I don't know, Brenda, if you might know the answer to that, how we compare. It may be.
Let me look and see what I have. I may have some documentation on that.
Mr. Chair, just to
Senator Ringo.
I mean, it was my understanding that our compensation rates were a little greater than other states, and I just didn't know if that was true or not. I'd heard that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
There's two studies going back probably, I don't know, 8 years, maybe 6 years ago, that indicate that they're very healthy and I don't know if it was experience from other states, but that the study conclusion was that they could get by on 15%.
Yeah.
I hear there's legislation in the works.
There is.
I think originally, and I can be corrected, but I think originally the rate was set at 35%. And what you found was a few very large sandwich shops and video game centers, essentially, were getting 35% of very large plays. And so the lottery adopted this declining schedule. Reduce at least the compensation that's going to the very large player, large retail.
And do you know who, Dick, who has authority? There was some discrepancy at the legislature. I know the commission obviously plays the direct role. Does the legislature have the authority to set commission rates?
Well, I think the director should respond to that. My understanding at this point is the commission sets the rates, but the commission is likely to be responsive to some sort of legislative preference.
And isn't there an issue, Mr. Chair, too, of the individual contracts that are signed, that there would probably be some obligation to continue the rates
till the end of the contract?
Till the end of the contract. And so any impact, if you were looking at getting revenue from this, you would have to look at that.
Prospectively.
Yeah.
Okay, so can we get at the question of whether this is too high or too low? All right. And that's hard to do, but let's take a shot at it. This is just for new Senate person's breath. I made it as easy as I could.
Sure, you're not Irish, Dick.
You didn't put a picture on there, and that's usually what the request is.
There's all those letters.
Let's take the easy case first. I did this a couple years ago, and at that time, lottery gross revenue was about $425 million. So let's assume that the dark green line holds and that lottery game revenue is independent of retailer compensation. And the argument that you can make there is, well, if the players determine the amount of the play, not the retailers, and what do the players care what the retailer compensation is? If that's true, then you're starting here on this light green line in terms of the net return, gross receipts, less prizes. This is what's left over, essentially, to eventually end up as transfers to the net of expenses, transfers to the economic development fund. So in this case, the net transfer is sensitive to the retailer compensation rate, but gross revenue is not. So as you back up from the 32% where you are here toward 15%, what you find is that net revenues would increase very rapidly. And that's because you're assuming that gross play stays the same and you're just taking more of it. Now, to me, that was not a logical relationship. I suspect that gross revenue is going to be sensitive to the retailer compensation percentage. And that's primarily because I think the retailers have some impact on play through advertising, through the nature of the facility set aside, through the fact that they, in fact, have machines for people to play on. So I think the amount of the play is going to go down if the lottery retailers decide to throw the machines out the door. Okay? I think it will also go down if they decide to stuff them in a corner somewhere into less attractive facility. So I do think that there's a relationship. And, you know, in my sort of mathematical mind, I'm saying, okay, that looks like a logarithmic relation to me. And the beauty of that is that it's sort of like any marginal idea in economics, and that is the more you put into something, the less you get out of it. You get diminishing marginal returns for your investment. So what I'm thinking in choosing this sort of relationship is the more the retailer does to encourage play, the more he spends, the less play actually responds to that. So it's very responsibility, very responsive in the beginning, and then as he spends more and more money, play just doesn't respond. The particular function that I've chosen here has the character that it goes to zero, which is to say, if you gave the lottery retailers nothing for having those machines in the store, they would throw them out. Now, that's not necessarily true, because it could be that they still bring people into the facility and that they can make enough money off of the meals, the drinks, and so on that they play to compensate them for the cost of having that available. They might still choose, but I think it will certainly tend to fall dramatically. So anyway, if I say that function represents reality, and again, it's not based on any data. It's based on just sort of theoretically hypothesizing what it ought to look like. Then the red line is what happens to your net revenues. And you're starting here. And as you begin to reduce the lottery compensation ratio, then you're getting a bigger and bigger piece of a smaller and smaller pie. And you're not getting much more. That's what this suggests. So it suggests, you know, that you're probably certainly not going to follow along this green line, assuming that gross revenue is constant, but that you're going to experience substantially less increases. But it still indicates some increases by reducing the lottery retailer percentage. And again, that might not be true. And the results of these show up in this way. Assumption one, where gross revenue is constant, then as you back off the percentage from where you are now at 32 down to 15, you're showing up something like $75 million in revenue a year. If you follow the functions that I hypothesized, you're still getting revenue. This maximizes at a rate of about 23% and would gain you about $9 million a year. Is it true? I have no idea.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Chair, so one way you might be able to test this is with the towns that have changed the rules on smoking. Because if you looked at the activity in Eugene and the activity in Springfield, it would at least verify your theory about putting it in a comfortable place to play in. And I'll bet you a nickel that the revenue's down in Eugene. They've closed a couple of the places. It's only down, I know, when I'm up here in Salem. No, but that's true. I mean, it's not anecdotal. They closed a couple of places in Eugene, and people are admitting that they're going over to Springfield because they can smoke there.
Yeah.
I'll bet you that has an impact on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Farrelly.
We have an estimate of some $30 million more dollars in revenue, I think, associated with the addition of line games. And I just wondered if you had any projections or demonstrations of the potential.
You missed that part of the meeting.
Sorry. Never mind.
No, just for your information, the number I gave was a lottery presented in January of 2002, and that's $50 million. Hope 305 by any.
Wow.
Is it 160, you did? No, it's 40 per year.
40 per year.
40 million a year.
For line games.
Wow. Thank you. Just wanted us to acknowledge what was laying on the table here.
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. I like your fancy curves, but they seem pretty much guesswork to me. I mean,
they are.
Yeah. So where does that leave us on what's the right compensation level?
Well, I'm not sure. I think what I'm suggesting is that please don't be motivated by that, by the dark blue lines here. But I think that's very unrealistic. It certainly, it might turn out to be true for small changes in the compensation ratio. But I really, you know, just in terms of economic theory, I would have to advise you that there is going to be a relationship between retailer compensation and play.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that the best estimate I can make at this time is the green one.
Okay.
And I admit I don't have a very good basis for doing it.
Okay. Thank you.
It's just got to be finding that balance where the proper incentive for the retailer is there and so that the games are accessible. And I guess we're not sure if we found that balance. Although a good accounting with other states, that would be helpful just to know what other states are finding in terms of how they're compensating their retailers.
Lottery expense percents, sort of revealing a little bit of what I said earlier in the beginning, this should essentially be a red line because it's only the traditional game, but it's also the total. You had lottery fluctuating around 16%, and it's been near 16%. And here, anyway, since that time, and it doesn't have to be 16%, what the Constitution says is the combination of the two, the total green line here, has to be less than 16%. But I also want to induce some caution here in terms of, because I'm ignoring what lottery calls administrative savings, because I don't know exactly where that goes. And if you counted that as a reduction in expense, they would be, for the traditional games, they'd be well below their 16%. But if you're talking about limiting expense, again, you need to address the question, I think, of whether you want to deal with these two programs separately, because the expense experience is certainly much different in the two. If you try averaging the two, then you're talking in terms of being down here around somewhere below 4% is the limit you want to put on it. And then you also have the problem at growth over time because of the relative importance of the two different programs in terms of contributions to expense is going to continually throw that floor out of balance in some sense with the reality. I looked at advertising also a couple years ago, and I had some data from lottery primarily related to the traditional games. That's where the advertising occurs anyway, as far as lotteries concerned. And I was able to sort of functionally relate sales to the amount that was spent on advertising. And the particular relationship is simply comes out of a linear regression analysis, which says that sales is equal to a negative constant plus 106 times the log, natural logarithm of advertising expenditures, and then also positively related with per capita personal income. And the last variable there is just a dummy variable I used because the first 2 years were different. And so I have a shift variable in there for those first 2 years. The regression, if you look at it from a statistical standpoint, is highly significant. R-squared, which is a measure of the overall percentage of variation that's explained by the regression, says it explains 99.4% of the variation. The reliability of this 1.06 coefficient is essentially measured by an F function. Basically, you know, if your F values are 2 or 3, you're talking about, you're pretty sure that variable is different from 0. And with an F value of 22, you know it's different from 0. And it also says that the fairly small boundary around that coefficient in terms of 95% reliable confidence in it. So it's a good regression so far as it goes. And the results of analyzing the regression are kind of interesting. Well, first of all, how does it actually purport in terms of explaining sales? The first 2 years, as you might expect, are nice and close because the dummy variable puts it in there. The average is, you know, comes out in the size of the dummy variable. But thereafter, sales as forecast, the dark blue, are fairly close to sales in terms of actual dollars. Well, what does the equation imply? It implies that a $1 increase in advertising would add $4.25 to sales. and would add $3.13 to transfers.
Okay.
So again, you're sort of, how you interpret this depends on what your goal. If you want to minimize gambling activity, you want to minimize advertising. If you want to maximize the amount of revenue that the lottery is generating, it would, the implication of this is they're not advertising enough. Right? If it were free enterprise business activity, and this is true, they'd advertise it. And that's the end of the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good show.
I think after that regression analysis, Mr. Chair, we better send Mr. Yates back to the home. Trying to confuse us again.
Should invite him to our caucus this afternoon.
Yeah.
That Senator Miller is convening.
Well, that's right.
Then I'll go to the home.
Thank you. Any questions or any discussion from the committee? Thank you, Dick.
Sure.
Committee, with that, I think we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 173.
That's Dick's bill, too.
Oh.
It's trade pledge.
Okay.
And actually, Dick, while you get situated, to give you some time on this bill, Brenda, I was thinking if you could give us just an update. You've been getting wide accolades on your first
week
in office, but you might give us just a thumbnail brief on some of the accountability measures you've taken with the lottery and some decisions that you've enacted.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that for the record. Brenda Rocklin, the interim director of the Oregon Lottery since December 12th. Essentially, what I did before I ever walked through the doors of the Oregon Lottery was to study the administrative expense audit issued by the Secretary of State, which identified a number of questionable administrative expenses that the lottery had engaged in. And essentially what I have done since my arrival is to really try to shut down all of the questionable expenses until the lottery could at least spend some time analyzing whether those expenses should continue or not. And in many cases, I've simply discontinued the practice. What the commission did last month was to adopt a new travel policy which addresses many of the concerns raised by the administrative expense audit and really does put the lottery in line with other state agencies so that when we travel both in-state and out-of-state, the travel rates would be the same as other state employees receive in terms of per diem. We no longer travel. It used to be that we would travel under expenses that were actual and reasonable, and there wouldn't be a cap as there is on other state employees, and that's no longer the case. Lottery employees will be subject to travel restrictions that all other state employees have. I think that went a ways in, I think, sending a message that the lottery does intend to be more in line now with what the other practices are for state agencies. In terms of renting off-site meeting places, that really has just been totally discontinued unless there's a legitimate business reason to do so. The meetings are now occurring at the lottery. The refreshments that were being provided have been discontinued. The employee incentive programs have been discontinued in the sense that it used to be that there would be monetary or vacation time given for high performance. That's been discontinued. The Employee of the Month program has been discontinued until further study. A lot of the educational classes that came under scrutiny have been discontinued. It doesn't mean that there's not still people getting education through the Oregon Lottery because we'd made a commitment to that beforehand, but certainly that's being scrutinized at this point in time. We also had a community relations program that came under attack in terms of how recipients were being selected for that particular program, and that has now essentially, to the extent we've made commitments to organizations, we're going to honor those commitments, but we're simply taking a look at whether that program should even be continued when we set the budget for the next fiscal year.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
We appreciate and encourage continued, even beyond what the audit reported, just continuing, especially in this budget climate that we're in, and I think we're appreciative of the efforts you've you've undertaken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also just tell the members of the committee that is the, I guess, the next step that I've already taken, though, is to start looking at other expenditures by the Oregon Lottery in terms of a building remodel, for example, and money spent on our facilities budget, just taking a look really at all of the expenses and making certain, particularly in these tough economic times, that we're not spending money that we don't need to be spending, and that will continue.
I think she's just saying that because she's still interim and she has to go in front of the committee. Uh-huh. I think all this will change after Thursday.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it's Friday, right?
It's Friday.
Mr. Yates, what does Senate Bill 173 do?
Senate Bill 173 basically deals with how lottery reports or how lottery treats winners. They currently have to withhold 8% of any lottery winnings in excess of $5,000. And that's unchanged. The changes occur in Section 3, which deal with anyone who earns a prize in excess of $600. And what this says is that at the time that prize is won, lottery will provide them with a federal form, essentially, a W-2G, which is a report of income earned through gambling. The way the current law is interpreted is that they provide one essentially at the end of the year. What this says is that lottery will provide a W-2 with each prize at the time that prize is won. And then it also allows the Department of Revenue or the recipient to request a copy of any of those so that if you won a prize in January and you're not filing your income tax return until the following February or something like that, you may have lost your W-2 dash G. You can ask the lottery for another one. And that's basically the only change in this bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I concur with that summary. Let me just give you, a reason for this bill. Under current law, the Oregon Lottery issues approximately 7,000 W-2Gs each January to players who win more than $600 when they play lottery games. What happens then after those forms go out in January is that several hundred of the forms come back to the Oregon Lottery for a variety of reasons, mostly because players may have moved after they were paid the prize and didn't advise the lottery of the change of address, and so we don't have that. Or there may have been an incorrect address that was given to the lottery, and for that reason the form comes back. That results in lottery staff then expending time and money trying to locate those players to get the W-2G forms to them. The intent of Senate Bill 173 is simply to allow the Oregon Lottery to hand the W-2G form to the player at the time they come to the Oregon Lottery to pick up their prize winnings. And really, two benefits to this bill. One is it allows the Oregon Lottery to avoid the cost of trying to track down players who have moved or have an incorrect address at the time they claim the prize. But secondly, it also ensures that all of the prize winners are actually going to get a W-2G form at the time they pick up their winnings. As Mr. Yates said, the other thing that the bill does is it will allow a player who loses a form between the time they get it and the time they file their taxes to contact the Oregon Lottery and obtain a duplicate copy of the form, and that won't present any problem to us. So it's really a cost-saving measure on behalf of the Oregon Lottery.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Mr. Chair.
Close the public hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 173.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Move 173 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Corcoran has moved Senate Bill 173 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
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 Aye. 4-0. The bill passes. And Senator Fortran, could you carry that on the consent agenda? Thanks. Close work session and close Senate revenue for the day. Very efficient. With this.